Okay, welcome to this session 6, keeping yourself safe. Hopefully this will actually continue without a problem. The last session, session 5, about the basics of astral projection, went horribly wrong and the machine rebooted a few times during the session, so I had to abandon or limp along and abandon any of the podcast recordings. So hopefully we'll see how this goes today. Now, thanks for coming along. It's still a lovely summer out there, but and I think people prefer to be outside than stuck here listening to me chattering away. Now, this session is titled Keeping Yourself Safe. Now, the idea here, and this covers a couple of areas, is about safe working location on the border. Let me just do a quick sum of the previous sessions, just for those that haven't seen them or listened to them or been here or whatever. My preference is for non-physical working through visualization and astral projection. Now, in the previous sessions, I've explained the basics and my main means of doing visualization. And in the last session, as I said, this was about the basics, the first steps to do an astral projection. Now, the point of this session is the creation of a safe place to work on an astral plane or whatever plane you want to call it, and the workings that you do there. Now, for me, it's a seamless transition from the visualization to astral projection. Oh, hello, welcome, we have a new arrival. Let me just sort out if you are... Oh, I recognise you. Please take a seat. Hopefully you can hear me. Yep, cool, doesn't worry. We just started. I suspect with the decent weather, the turnout's not going to be too great. It hasn't been through the summer. It's been such a good summer. But welcome anyway. So yes, for me, this is a seamless transition from visualization to astral projection. They're the same kind of thing, as far as I'm concerned. Now, early on in my path, and the main reason that I do this, do the preference for non-physical working, is that, well, it covers a number of reasons, really. I'm naturally adept at visualization and projection. I was experiencing both at an early age, spontaneous projection from about the age of 7 onwards. So, it seemed natural that I should go this way. Over time, it became my sole means of working. I didn't really have much materials to go by as far as learning or picking up physical stuff. It just didn't seem to work for me. So more and more I began to use visualization. Now, coupling that, my goddess... an Egyptian goddess called Salket, a scorpion goddess of healing and protection. She suggested that the evocations I were doing to try and meet up with her weren't really effective enough. So she just suggested that I make use of the visualization and the astral projection stuff to meet her halfway. And that's what I've done through the creation of a safe place on some vista somewhere. No idea where, did when I created them, I didn't bother to document it. Such is the way of things. Now, so this safe place to work, essentially, and I've mentioned this in previous sessions, but if you've missed those, I will recap them briefly. The safe place is essentially an Egyptian temple that I created over the course of, well, years. Not entirely certain. It was the early 90s I started this, and it was probably 4 or 5 years that it took to make it concrete enough that I could use it. But it's an Egyptian temple, mainly because of my Egyptian goddess. And within it, I created a series of rooms that were to function as sort of study, libraries, purification areas, i.e. baths and whatever. Ritual bathing is quite a significant aspect of the Egyptian path. And the sort of main temple ritual area. So these little rooms all function as what I need them to be. So how did I sort of come up with these ideas? As I say, my goddess suggested I take this route. I'm fairly well up on my Egyptian architecture and history, so I naturally chose this temple, and then I sort of created the temple design. Now, luckily for me, I'm fairly well trained in the art, in art and graphic design, so the creation of a building was a relatively trivial process for me. But for anyone else who wants to go along these lines, and I suggest you try, to be honest, and I'll come back to more reasons why I think other people should try this method as opposed to physical ritual work on in your front room or in the bedroom or whatever as we go along. Now, so for me, what did I need to do? Well, the appearance obviously was the easiest. There's lots of traditional design methods. Location, though, was the challenge. At the time, I was still dabbling with astral projection, so I wasn't entirely certain where I was sort of stabbing in the dark. And likewise with the visualization, although I was pretty okay with that, that was my main thing at the time, I was still fairly uncertain how to go about this. Now, and I have no documentation on this, which is really annoying. I didn't start documenting. Well, I started to document around this time I created the temple, but my Book of Shadows at the time, I didn't put dates in them, which seemed completely stupid why the whole about 100 odd pages with no real dates. Luckily I'm now like 6th or 7th volume in, and actually I try to document more thoroughly now, but at the time, hey, that's how it goes. So how did I get to this location? Well, I was already well aware of got a request for TP. Let me just bring in yay more. So, okay. Right. Let's see. We'll just make sure she gets here okay. Because this is a fairly crucial part, especially if you've not encountered the previous visualization session where I dealt with this particular topic Is she coming? Yes, no. Okay. Oh well, I'll continue. Now, I found with visualization, and this is going back on a previous bit of what topic, but seeing those present probably weren't at those sessions, I'll mention it. Guided workings have never really worked for me. I am a watery creature, and the vast majority of guided sessions tend to be you're in a forest, you're walking along a path, you meet blah blah blah. And so that's just never felt right for me. And fairly early on, I noticed that I might start off with the way this guided session is presented to me, and then just suddenly sort of divert off somewhere. Early on, I started to worry that that was a problem. And then I worked out, after a while, that this is perfectly normal. And in that forest, whatever or whatever it was not right for me. Where I needed to be was where I was being sort of dragged off to, if you want to call it that. So I tend to say this for anybody now, if you do a guided working and you don't follow what's being presented, don't panic, don't feel you're doing it wrong, you are going where you need to go. Now, in that regard, this is where I then thought, well, let's use this particular approach to placing where my temple was to be. So I started to wander off and found somewhere that I decided this would make a good place. Again, I didn't document it and I don't have a great memory. This was a good 20 years ago now, so I can barely remember a few days, let alone a couple of decades. But anyway, what I found was a good spot. Now, what did I then do? What I can vaguely remember was that I already had the designs for my temple. As I say, I was drawing these things. I'd sketched them, and I knew what I wanted. So it was at that point I then said, like in Second Life, this is a great example of creating a safe place to work, because the way I do my visualization is very much like what happens here in Second Life. It's spookily the same. It's like going into a sandbox and just plonking down a house. Boom. That was it. That, I think, is the closest explanation to how I did it. Was, I'm here. Boom. Down. Now, now, I do have vague memories of a dark void that this was within. But that was for only a short space of time. What I did realise is that having a temple floating around was probably a bad thing, and I needed to create some protection for it. I'll come on to the protection in a moment. Now, I'll step back a little bit onto the design. Now, when you get down to the construction of a safe place to work, and this goes for any visualization as well as creating your safe working area, it's all about getting getting imagery in your head that is a convincing reality. Now, it comes down to an awful lot of hard work. As I say, this took a few years at least to build. and feel that I'm convinced enough that this is real when I'm there. But there's a number of things that you can do to help that can reinforce this. Is draw pictures, loads of pictures. You don't have to be a great artist. As long as you can sketch or photograph what you want, or even build in Second Life what you want. If you can build, I can't build in Second Life, so I'd rather sketch instead. But if you, it's to reinforce the imagery. There's a little bit of research I recently read on memory. If you form a fist and sort of create a fist, release it, and create a fist again with your left hand, it enhances your memory recording, and to recall that memory, do the same with the right hand. Or it could be the other way around, I can't remember because I'm crap. So it's I can't even remember where I was going with that. Then see, I can barely remember these things. The whole point is reinforcing the imagery. So drawing, oh that's it, repetition. If you're drawing it, you're reinforcing the imagery in your head. It's constantly there. The image is rebuilding. It's like, say, learning to drive. Early on, you've got your hands and feet all doing different things, and it's hard to focus on which ones to do. You focus on one, you lose focus on the other, and it all goes a little bit funny. As you get used to it, the hands and feet seem to work on their own, and you don't need as much conscious control of them. Same goes for anything learning, and the same goes for this. The more you create the imagery, the more it becomes second nature next time you go to use it. You're programming your mind and your body to understand these things. So the drawing, well, also the drawing acts as a different way. It is an act of visualization, and it's pushing that imagery out to wherever it's going to end up being. So it's, refer back to some of the other sessions, and if you haven't got the notes, I'll throw them out at the end. So the note cards are a bit rubbishy. There's PDFs on my blog that's easier to read because they're nicer. So if you're not any good with imagery, you can also try jotting down words to describe, using all your senses, write some kind of story. I actually do have, in the first couple of Book of Shadows of mine, a temple walkthroughs where I've actually written down a description of what it looks like, how I feel as I progress through the temple and explore the rooms. These sort of narrative things can reinforce the imagery. And it's whatever you can use. It's whatever skills you can to reinforce the structure. Well, I mentioned here in the notes using Second Life building skills. If you can, do them. I've been to a few of the rituals here, and they've been really good. And of course, I do a number of healing through Second Life, and that's quite potent too. So it has a purpose. Or you could even physically build something. You know, it's, if you've got some kind of model making skills, then knock up a bit of clay or a bit of wood or something. It's a variety of means to bring about the imagery. Now, it does take time. Now, I've mentioned the creating a convincing environment for yourself. Now, if you've been here before, or you've picked up any of the other podcasts, I've mentioned about this temple before. And there's a few aspects of it that make it very convincing for me. And they may seem strange to actually do. For example, I'm sort of a blonde redhead kind of person. I hate bright sunlight. Seriously burn instantly when the sun's out. Now, my temple is in the middle of a desert. It's a really hot desert. You would think I would tone it down a bit to more like my liking, but I assume it's going to be in a blazing hot desert, therefore it's in a blazing hot desert, and if it was a nice cool day, then I wouldn't be very convinced it's real. The most convincing thing for me for that it's real is the sand. I absolutely hate sand. I cannot stand it between my toes. It's... No, it just makes me cringe. Oh no, I'm getting the imagery now. It's horrible. So, the fact that it's in a sandy desert suggests to me that with all the sand floating around, and I do get the wind blowing the sand in through the open doors, and there's like sandbank drift up against the doors when I turn up every now and again, and I've got to sweep it out. Now, the fact that I detest sand, and the fact that there is sand there. Now, if there wasn't sand, and it was solid, and it didn't move, and it didn't irritate me, and get between my toes as much as it does there, I wouldn't be convinced it's real. Now, this is one of some of the main points that I like to push over on this is, even if it's annoying, it shows it's real. Now, as I say, there could be sand pushed up against the walls and so on, but okay, that's one of my sort of compromises, because this is a reality that I've created. I can actually just wave my hand and whatever, and the sand just blows away and it cleans out completely. Well, that's my reality. I can do these things, but the sheer fact that the sand can creep in and annoy me is real. Now, now I have this place, and I've mentioned that I've got a number of rooms for varying functions. So what would I do here? Well, anything that I would do on a physical ritual, when it boils down to. But, because it's a permanent feature, there are some things I don't need to do. It's a sacred place for me. No one else goes here apart from myself and my goddess and any other creatures we both happen to want to come in and let them in. So for me, there's no need to draw a circle, raise a circle, do the quarters or whatever you like to call it, because it's a permanent sacred space. Now, this has the bad effect that if I have to do something physical, a physical ritual, I can actually forget to cast the circle, because generally I don't do them because I've got a permanent working space. But I've never really found a problem with that anyway. So, pretty much any ritual goes as far as I'm concerned. Anything I would do, I'd do there. What else do I do? There are a few other things I can do there that I obviously can't do here on the physical. And that is create things at will as tools. Now, these are very useful, and I've mentioned this in some previous sessions too. Because the reality there is fluid. Yes, I would use it as replacement physical. This is the whole point, is that I tend not to do as much physical ritual, though I've been slightly veering back towards that just to keep my hand in, I think. But it's really quick. I used to do a lot of this on the train sometimes, because it's through visualization, projection and so on. You can just find anywhere. You can just sit on the sofa and have a go, as long as you can get a decent meditative state going, or sit on a bus or train or in the park, pretty much anywhere, and obviously someone's just going to think you're having a nap. It's really convenient. Notice I didn't say do this at work, because that would be falling asleep at the desk would be thrown. But yeah, it's replaces pretty much all my physical work, and there are some extra benefits, as I shall explain now. The tools, because you're obviously visualizing, you don't have those tools that you would have physical. I have here physically, I do have a broom that I made a couple of Beltanes ago, a couple of wands, my Thamy, my sistrum. The sistrum's an Egyptian rattle, sacred to Isis and Hathor. It's just tambourines, the modern equivalent. So I've got a few physical things here, but if I'm projected, I don't obviously have them. Now, but what I have done is to create a visualized form of them. And so that if I have an item of furniture, because it's a fluid environment, I can create things on demand, then it's not a problem. I can hold out my hand and my Thamy could be there, or my wand can be there. It's a very useful environment, and if there's something I haven't got, then I think, okay, that's pretty handy, I should really have that. I can create it, much again like Second Life. I can res things. So, it's great. Now, the most important bit, and this is why I recommend people have a go, is the potency of the experience. This, I don't tend to use this temple on a regular basis. It's just when I need it, mainly because of this potency. Because, as I mentioned earlier, that my goddess suggested we meet because the evocations weren't going as well as we could do. There was a lot of effort to bring her back and for her to get there. It was just pointless, wasted effort. I wasn't quite prepared for the extent of the connection when she's present there. If you are looking for a stronger connection with your deity or with any particular spirit, then this is definitely the way to go. The force, I wouldn't say the force, the presence of the spirits on this on wherever this happens to be, let's say a non-material plane, is so much brighter, so much more intense. It's quite often like looking at straight into the sun when she's present. It's an amazing experience, and this is why I don't do it too often, because it's just so intense, it takes a while to calm down and to get some bearing back on things. So it's good. Now, on the flip side of that, is that you're probably not alone. You may have created a location, as I have. I've created this temple. I'm there. My goddess can appear, and she's extremely raw and intense there, more than what she is when I experience her on this physical plane. Probably because the connection between the planes may mask some of the power or something, I don't know. It's not really that important. Now, the fact that I'm on this particular plane, wherever it happens to be, and she's there too, and she's a lot more stronger than I was experiencing before. Now, there could well be other native inhabitants of this location that I've built my temple. And of course, if I've created it in some kind of, I've assembled sort of order from the chaos of the plane around me to create this thing, so I must have, it would probably want to revert back to its natural state. And or there could be things lurking around watching because someone's having a bit of fun, and you know, a blazing hot goddess passing by probably does draw attention somewhere, I don't know. But the idea is that there could be witnesses or inquisitive entities around, be they good or bad or indifferent. So we come down to taking the precautions of protection and ensuring that this sacred space is definitely safe for yourself and probably for anything passing by. You don't want something disturbing a ritual. It's bad enough in a physical when someone walks in halfway through a ritual that's taking place. It can be a bit disorientating and disruptive and disharmonious of the experience for everybody concerned. Same way is working on this, in this temple, in this sacred space, or wherever it happens to be, but these things may not give enough warning that they're making themselves known. So we got to look at protection of the area. Now, as I've said, my temple is in the middle of a desert. It's an endless desert. And it's situated in the middle of an endless desert. It's not that an endless desert has a middle, but it's an endless desert. If I'm stood outside in the colonnade, I can see, and if I go down onto the sand, not that I like to, that's blazing hot. I can see in the distance across this flat horizon a ring of mountains, which seems odd because if it's infinite, then there shouldn't be an horizon with a set a mountain range that is so far ahead. Doesn't make sense, but any case, this is my mind doesn't have to make sense. It's my reality. It's never made much sense to me, but I think this will become clearer when I explain some of the methods of protection that I use. So there's that distance from the outside to the temple. If somebody was to hit that mountain, they would never reach the temple because it's distance. Now, I've also got the blazing hot sun, which should burn anything that sort of feels prepared it needs to be able to walk across this sand. So, distance, mountains, and the baking heat is sort of a form of protection. Now, there are multiple layers that I make use of, and the same as let's think physical protection methods that I use also apply here. Now, obviously, I have help from my goddess, and she probably does a fair bit to keep the protection up that I'm not aware of. She's highly protective of me, and it's not good to get on her wrong side, as I have experienced a few times in the past. So if you can gain any friendly help wherever you happen to place these things, then that's always good. But it's the methods we want to use. Now, I have four methods. Well, actually, there's a few more than that, but in the concept, in the in relation to what you can do for this kind of thing, then these four seem to work. The first one, and I call it, and I think it's been referred to in a variety of places, called the eggshell method, where you create a physical shell around yourself, an energy field, force field, if you want to use something from the sci-fi world, and things bounce off of it, or get absorbed, or whatever. And they can be however you want to visualize them. For me, they form part of the sky of the temple. And the sky in this world of mine sort of, it's blue, but there's sort of a purpley, plasmary sort of thing doing whatever it does, fuzziness to it. And so that's my sky, and that's the protective shield that I have around the whole outside. I have my mountains at the edges, but going above, arcing right the way over, is this bluey, purple, plasmary sky. And it stops things coming in. Now, like any sort of shell, you can actually have multiple layers to have different effects or protect against certain things. Or you can have one that just does everything. Whatever. It's not that important. One that I do have in use, of use physically, and I've mentioned these in the notes, and I'm not sure why I mentioned this particular one, because I don't think... Well, in a way, I do have it in sort of on this temple. It's called the spike door method. Some people do feel uncomfortable with this one, because this is... Some of us tend to go along the lines of not letting people do what you will, but as long as it hurts none kind of thing. I tend not to follow that. If somebody wants to cause harm, then there's probably a reason for it. But using the spike door method has worked for me in the past. Now, the spike door method essentially is a door or wall or a protective barrier with spikes on the outside. Sometimes it's a wall of thorns, and I've used that in the past as a physical protection for one of my previous houses, which incidentally was the only one never to be burgled, through the use of this and a number of other methods. I was the only house not to be burgled in the street, so I'm going to take that as it actually works. So, I've got some other methods that work really well. I'll mention those as well, because they could be useful, but not in the case of visualization. But yes, the spike door method is you have a barrier with some spiky, painfully bits on the outside. So the thought is that if someone or something launches an attack, they're going to hurt themselves when they hit those spikes. Now, hopefully, they're not going to be dumb enough to continue hurting themselves, because they'll hurt themselves and the pain will hopefully stop them continuing. If they feel stupid enough that they want to keep going at it, they're going to hurt themselves some more. That's their choice. They have free will. They can stop. So I don't feel it's my sort of problem that they're hurting themselves. If they want to throw their anger at someone, then it's going to rebound on them. So it's not going to affect, and it's not going to affect me. It's going to hurt themselves. I'm happy with that. It's worked. I like it. Now, another method that I've used on this temple and on other things physically, it preferably works better with books, this one, in small items. I call it the diversion method. It's to make things look really boring so that that people won't look at it and think, I want that. They will think, nope, that looks uninteresting. I'll go for that thing that's over there. That seems to work really well. I use that for items I don't want people to touch or mess around with. It could be in plain sight, but they will just, for some bizarre reason, think it's not important or worth playing with. Actually, I've even cast that on myself a few times as well. It's a very good hiding, invisibility, cloaking kind of thing. It's a very useful one. Now, I've got that sort of on the temple. Now, the temple is quite large, but I combine that with the next one, cores, the size method, to make something really big, tiny. It's sort of like the diversion method, but it's sort of making it look small and unimportant. It's probably the same thing, to be honest. I might have just been bulking out the text. But anyway. That's sort of how I apply the protection. Now, another aspect of the protection that I've employed is not telling you details of the temple. I've told you it's in an Egyptian building. It's got a colonnade at the front. It's got the desert and the mountains. And there's a number of rooms within it. And I've mentioned some of those rooms. I've not told you about any of the layout, how they physically are laid out, the design of the building. So if you were to visualize what I've told you about my temple, you would probably not have a matching image as far as I'm concerned. Now, that's important because if you cannot visualize it, then I'm pretty certain you wouldn't be able to visit it. The idea being there is that the secrecy I have for the design for my temple is enough to stop people from picturing it and picturing it over a long length of time so that they can be gravitated towards it, as I mentioned previously in the guided workings. And that, I think, seems to work for me. I've used this now since, I said, from the early to mid 90s. It's certainly got enough within it to keep things safe. Now, I'll mention this. I just mentioned about this other protection method that I used on the house, and I've mentioned this on other sessions, but seeing we're talking about protection, I will throw that out now. There is two things I've picked up. 1, a superb spell called the Dog of Defense. It is the most useful spell for protection I have ever used. It's in the Delord's Ashcroft Norwiki. I can never pronounce her name. I think that might be how it is. Delores Ashcroft Norwiki. I think. Nope, that's Norwiki, as in Norwiki. It's nope, that's not the way how you spell it. It's no, there's I think there's a couple of C's and H's in there. I don't know, but anyway, it's the Practical Magic Workbook, I think. I've probably got it written around somewhere. It's probably on my blog. I might have mentioned it. I'm pretty certain it's on my blog. Now, that is a spell that was given to her from, originates from Dionne Fortune when she was a member of the Golden Dawn. And it's a superb protection thing of creating a thought form to stand guardian for a location. Now, I combine that with another sort of, well, I wouldn't say ritual, another sort of spell that I discovered over the years. Doesn't really have a name, but my goddess, like many Egyptian deities, has a number of sort of servants, minions, that they can make use of. My goddess, being goddess of scorpions, she's got several scorpions. Not that that makes any difference. Isis has got snakes, Sobek's got arrows, I don't know what some of the others are. There's all sorts of different strange ones, but my goddess has several scorpions. Now, it took me a while to locate the names, because the translations do seem to change the spellings quite often. But I found these seven scorpions. I then eventually found the names for them, and I found a way to cast them. There was a piece of text called The Lament of Isis Nephthys, or The Narrative of Isis. It seems to be varied again on what it is. But Isis summons them, and it's very similar to a section in the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram, where you summon the four archangels. But in this case, it goes Tophon and Bophon before me, Mestet, Mesetateth beside me, Potet, Thotet, and Maatet behind me. So, what I generally do here is that I combine the several scorpions with a Dog of Defense spell, and so I place seven of these guardian spirits around the house. Now, in this particular house I was talking about, my last one, there was an awful lot of burglaries. Next door to me, he had his house burgled two or three times. The lady beside me at least once, and I know most of the others in the street had also been burgled. Now, I wasn't going to really go for that. So, I created, I did some practical stuff first, because practical is always worth trying. So that was floodlights, not that others didn't have floodlights at the back of the house and so on. Boom. I also made use of lots of nice rose bushes and climbing roses all over the place to stop things from getting in. Likewise for other people, they had that too. So in a way, those things were tried and tested, and in some cases hadn't succeeded. But I had my magic. So I placed a Wall of Thorns spell the spike door method at both the front and back of the house. And most importantly, I placed this doggy defense spell with these 7 scorpions around the house. There was one particular one, because I would recast it every year. And I remember I found it in my Book of Shadows. I mentioned it because, and I recently spotted it again while writing my book that's due out in November. Yay, I got one plug in. Woo! Now, I noticed in this particular instance of casting, I sort of looked out into my back garden while casting it, and I'd placed one of the scorpions down on a section of the patio, and as I was looking at it, there was a cat walking across the garden, and it actually walked around the spot where I visualised where the scorpion was, which I thought was really freaky. And after it sort of walked round it, it sort of decided it didn't want to stay in the garden anymore. So I'm not sure if it sensed something. It must have sensed it to walk, suddenly stop going in the straight line and just go round and then continue and then decide it wants to leave. I don't know. That was one of the most amazing things I've seen happen. But in the 4.5 years I was there, my house was untouched. So for me, that's quite impressive amount of work. But anyway, but these are taking, and I tend to also use those same spells through visualization as well. In a way, I can actually use them at the temple for added benefit, but it's not often because I already have stuff in place. Now, as I'll just recap, layers, all the stuff you would do for protection physically is good to try within this. Document, draw, reinforce the imagery, experiment, use some of the previous stuff in my other sessions to get to grips with visualization, projection, and have a play. And do try. It's the most amazing experience, but it's bloody hard work. So just be prepared for that. It's going to take a while. Okay, I will wrap it up there, I think, for a short session. This has actually gone on for quite a long time. It's one of the shortest ones. Right, before I stop the podcast recording, any questions? Oh, you're welcome, you're welcome. Let me get the notes out and shared with you all. What I will also do is I will throw you out the existing previous ones up to now. That one, that one, that one, that one, and that one. And if you have any questions, let me have them now, or you can always find me whenever. But thank you for coming along. Hopefully now the autumn's coming in, we might get the sessions. Now, the next session in 2 weeks is one of my favourites, is on amulets. I quite like this one, so do come along for that. It's quite a giggle, that one. As I say, this is probably the last time this particular session is going to run. I'm probably going to significantly change it, merge it, or bin it. Haven't decided yet, so I'm glad I've recorded this one for prosperity, because the machine hasn't blown up yet. So the notes will be in PDF on the website, along with the podcast recording. in the next few days. If there's no questions, then I will shut the recording up. Anything? No? You're welcome. It's every 2 weeks this is on. Oh, I may as well mention again, this is every 2 weeks, so the next one, and of course I have my healing circle on a Monday every 2 weeks as well. Next session will be on the 22nd. There'll be of September. The healing circle will be on the 16th of September. And both of those are then every 2 weeks from that point onwards. If you haven't got any healing experience, don't worry, come along, it's still good. So, thank you for coming. And I need something to drink now. Stop recording. Thank you.